You're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with your host, Giovanni Puccini. Well, hey there, everybody. This is Giovanni Puccini, host of the GP Soccer Podcast. Welcome to our latest episode today. Every once in a while, I like to kind of give some chronological context as to where we're at when I tape these shows. So like I always say, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, when you tune into the show, which you can do, you'll kind of get a sense for where we're at. So here we are in the middle of June 2020. We are still in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. We here in this country and we globally for the most part, and this is a very general statement, things are starting to loosen up a little bit in terms of, letting people kind of get back out. And we're seeing most recently, I'm here in Massachusetts, most recently is allowing people to go back to restaurants, albeit outdoors. We still have to maintain social distancing, that type of stuff. Every state is different in our country relative to how they have managed the reopening of society. Some states have done it well, some have not done it well, and we have seen some extraordinarily serious spikes in recent COVID-19 cases and deaths. You see some tragic numbers in Florida, in Texas, in Arizona. The bottom line here, folks, this we're still in the midst of all of this, and it's not going away anytime soon until such time we see a vaccine for this thing. And, at the end of the day, I circle back to the very beginning of all this, to the measures that are indeed the most effective. And that is, wear a mask, wash your hands, be responsible regarding social distancing. If you don't need to go out, don't go out. And if you're in a community, you're in a state, you're in a locale that has allowed some freedom, so to speak, to go out. It's not yeehaw time where you can just rip off the mask, go out, hang out, and be with people in very close proximity. It's not yeehaw time. You go out, but you go out with still some very prudent, rules in place, in particular, the wearing of a mask. It has proven to be one of the most effective ways of cutting down the spread of the coronavirus. In terms of the soccer community, you're seeing some loosening of restrictions. Small groups of players can get together with a coach and train, albeit with social distancing in mind. I mentioned in the last episode that if you can do a good job if you're a coach in putting together a quality training session that adheres to the social distancing aspect without compromising the reality or the integrity of a topic or the game. Just requires a little bit of creative thought when you're putting together a training session. So we're still in the midst of all this. And we are in the midst of another, unfortunate situation, that being with the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. We have seen some extraordinary, outpouring of emotion from not just the African-American community, the black community, but from socially responsible, enlightened people who have now said enough is enough. And when we talk about the sport of soccer, racism has reared its very ugly head in the sport of soccer, particularly at the international level, the professional level, on numerous occasions. African-American players, black players, in Italy and in England have been the brunt of bananas thrown at them, or monkey sounds, just terrible, abhorrent types of behavior from fans. Big air quotes that you can't see, big air quotes about fans, just being terribly insulting to players of color. It's still extraordinary to me. Call me naive, whatever you want, but it's still extraordinary to me. In 2020, we still haven't figured this out. In this country, it goes back hundreds of years in terms of oppression, systematic racism that is still entrenched in our society, that has prohibited a group of people to be kept aside, to be kept down. It is indeed time for a change, and we're seeing it. Maybe this is the time when you know, true change will indeed take place. As I broadcast here today, we're seeing some things taking place in our Congress, finally. And I don't want to get too deep into politics. I could. Those who know me really well know that I am indeed a hardcore political junkie, and I lean very left, very left. I am a proud progressive, and I could really go off on this, but I won't. It's a soccer show, but nonetheless, it's an issue that, you know, that is not only a societal issue, but as I noted earlier, does rear its head in our game as well. But we're seeing some movement in our Congress here in the United States about policing, how we police, how we secure, how we manage, you know, our communities when it comes to issues of race. We've got a ways to go. This momentum cannot subside. This momentum, this consciousness cannot wane. We have a very crucial election coming up in November, and it might be, hopefully, the turning point by which we can write a new chapter in the history of this country relative to race, relative to you know, systematic racism and the abolishment of systematic racism, and we hope that it also permeates into our game, into the world of soccer and sports in general. Let's not you know, stick just to soccer, where we don't look at another human being, you know, seeing their skin color first. We just see another human being, because at the end of the day, and this is not an oversimplification, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all human beings. That's the one thing we all have in common with every single being on this planet. We are all human beings. We may look a little bit different, but nonetheless, when you get right down to it, we're human beings. We're a member of the human race. And we must, as a race of people, the human race, we must look out for each other, protect one another, look at each other with love, and with a eye of equality. And certainly not what we're dealing with now. So, you know, that's where we're at. That's where a little bit of commentary there. I don't apologize. I don't. But that's where we're at in terms of the COVID-19. We're still in the midst of that. And unfortunately, sadly, we are in the midst of, you know, demonstrations and talking about, thankfully, talking about racism, institutional racism here in our country and across the world as well. And hopefully, you know, things, we turn the page. We turn the page. So where are we at in terms of, you know, soccer and COVID-19 and all this stuff and turning the page? Well, it can kind of give you some sports context. You know, the NBA is making plans to return to the courts. They've kind of sorted out how they want to manage that. The National Hockey League, certainly the same. I'll get to soccer at the end here. Major League Baseball can't seem to get its head out of its behind. The players and the owners are just colliding over the number of games, prorated salaries. They go back and forth, back and forth. And at this particular juncture, as I broadcast today, ain't nothing happening in the world of Major League Baseball. And there is a distinct chance that we may not see baseball here this summer. Baseball seems to like to shoot itself in the foot every few years and not see the greater good. But that's their problem. That's their problem. As far as soccer is concerned, here in the United States, MLS, it will be returning with its MLS's Back Tournament. What a terrible name. What a terrible name. MLS's Back Tournament. Could you have come up with something better? It's just something more, I don't know, just something better. That's just a terrible tournament name. But it is what it is. And it's going to be like a World Cup style return, where you've got, you know, 26 teams and there'll be 54 games, all situated in a bubble of sorts down in Orlando, Florida. In the heat of the summer, they're going to start play on July the 8th and conclude with a final game on August 11th. It's a World Cup style, as I noted, and it'll be group play, and then you'll have a knockout stage. The games will be played every day. I think they got kickoff times at 9 a.m., 8 p.m., and then 10:30 p.m., and then the plan is, after this tournament, they're going to kind of resume its regular season play. How that works out remains to be seen. I've heard some talk about, you know, the points accumulated in the tournament will count toward their regular season standing. So there'll be some carryover in terms of points accumulated in their World Cup style tournament down in Orlando. How the heck they're going to play soccer in Orlando, Florida, in the heat of the summer? Well, we'll see how that goes, but that's what MLS is at. The Bundesliga has been going for a little bit now. I've watched a few games. It's just weird. It's just really weird to see the games, and then you look up you know, and there's no one in the stands, but it is what it is. The Premier League is gearing up, as is Serie A. You know, they're trying to create environments that sound like normal, you know, some background noise to the broadcast, video boards, all kinds of funky stuff to kind of give it some semblance of reality. But you just can't get past your eyes. There's a soccer game and you kind of quickly look up and the seats are all empty. But it is what it is. The good news is they're playing. You know, they're playing and they're back out, and it gives us, we as soccer fans, a chance to watch some high-level soccer again. You know, we will be able to sort out some of these, you know, some of these standings. Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga will probably run away with that, as will Liverpool. Liverpool will probably run away with that. They've got such a wide margin at the top of the EPL. We'll see in La Liga with Barcelona, Real Madrid, in Italy, in Italia. You know, Juve or Lazio, we'll see how that sorts out. But nonetheless, at the highest levels here, we're playing. MLS will be back starting, you know, July the 8th. I know they're in the midst of training. So that's kind of where we're at in terms of, you know, soccer coming back. I know on the youth stage, some states have allowed small groups of players to come back with a coach, but you got to do social distancing, as I noted. So we're kind of, you know, we're kind of back, sort of. When we're back normal, my goodness, that just remains to be seen. So that's where we're at. So we have a guest today, which we'll get into on the other side of the commercial break. Our guest today will be Suzanne Young. You know, I'll get into her bio on the other side of the commercial break, and we'll have a nice discussion focusing in on primarily the high school athlete, the high school soccer player, but the high school athlete. When I first spoke to Suzanne about doing this, I really wanted to kind of fine tune a topic relative to, you know, nutrition and hydration and, you know, sleep, rest, that type of thing geared toward the high school athlete. That way there, you know, the folks who listen to it, you know, if you're a high school player, if you're a parent in particular, you know, there's some really, really, really good information there that you can use to take care of yourself if you're a high school athlete. And if you're a parent, you can, you know, use the information to help take care of your child, take care of your athlete as they resume play this fall, which we hope does happen. So our guest today will indeed be Suzanne Young. Again, like I said, on the other side of the commercial break. So this is Giovanni Pacini, the GP Soccer Podcast. Welcome back. I'm glad you're listening. Tell everyone about the show. Goodness knows I do. And on the other side of the commercial break, we will be chatting with Suzanne Young. Listen, don't go anywhere.
Hello, my name is Marcus DiBernardo, and I'm from Monroe College, and you're listening to GP Soccer Podcast with host Giovanni.
Are you serious about being a goalkeeper? Maybe you're somewhat new to the position, or maybe you're an experienced keeper looking to take your game to another level. If this is you, then getting the type of modern training to improve your game is a no-brainer. Giovanni Pacini of GP Soccer has world-class experience in the training and development of goalkeepers. Pacini is a member of the United Soccer Coaches National Goalkeeper Staff, a featured clinician on the video series on goalkeeping available through United Soccer Coaches, and has worked with some of the foremost goalkeeper coaches in the world. He has trained beginners all the way up to those at the pro level. So if you're serious about your goalkeeper training, contact Giovanni Pacini at GP4Soccer, and that's the number 4, at yahoo.com or at 617-968-1800, and be sure to visit GP Soccer at gp-soccer.com. And welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. You know who I am. I am your intrepid host, Giovanni Pacini. As I noted before the commercial break, we have an interview guest today, as I've been very fortunate to have throughout the course of season one, and in particular season two of the GP Soccer Podcast. I've had some wonderful, wonderful people from around the globe contributing to my show. And as I always say, the GP Soccer Podcast is like a mini coaching education course. And today, ladies and gentlemen, is no different. So, as I noted before the break, our guest today is Suzanne Young. Suzanne has been involved in academia as a professor for over 5 years. With a love of learning and multiple degrees, she's close to finishing her doctoral program at North Dakota State University in health, nutrition, and exercise sciences. Currently with a career in business and academia, she brings experience from the healthcare industry in consulting, sales, client relationship management. Now, before business school, she worked in the health and fitness industry in both management and as a practitioner. She has been a teaching coaching group exercise since college. Suzanne earned her master's of business administration and a master's in public health from UMass Amherst. She also holds a master of science from Western Illinois University and a bachelor's degree in dietetics and nutrition from the University of Dayton. In addition, she's a certified health and wellness coach through Well Coaches and a certified exercise physiologist through the American College of Sports Medicine. She's an avid cyclist and fitness enthusiast, as you might gather from that particular bio. So, Suzanne Young, welcome to the GP Soccer Podcast.
Thank you so much, Giovanni. It's so good to be here.
Well, you know, you've got more degrees than degrees. I mean, my goodness. when does it end? When have you going to become degreed out?
It never ends. But this current doctoral program has been a lengthy one, but very rewarding. And the plan is to finish it in 2020.
So
the plan.
So pretty soon it's going to be Dr. Suzanne Young.
It will.
All right. Next time I see you, I'm going to be calling you Dr. Young, Dr. Sue, Dr. Suzanne, Doc. It'll start with doctor. I assure you. Anyways, welcome to the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. So our focus today, as I noted before the commercial break, is I want to kind of hone in on parents of high school athletes. You know, the things that the parents should be aware of relative to like nutrition, hydration, rest, recuperation, maybe overuse issues. But I'd really like this broadcast to really be an education, if you will, for parents who listen in to say, how can I better take care of my soccer playing son or daughter or both for that matter, so that they can function as young people in high school sports. So let's kind of start with this. I'm curious, as with the case with all my guests, before we kind of dive into this particular subject area, where did this all begin for you? I joked about you being degreed out, but where did this passion all come from relative to health and fitness and exercise?
Yes, thank you. That's a really good question, and I'll try to keep my story short and for the sake of time. But growing up, I was tall, always tall for my age, but very uncoordinated and not very good at any sports, right? They were always trying to recruit me for basketball and volleyball, and no, that was not my thing. And being genetically blessed with some thin parents, I never had an issue in terms of with weight. But when I got to college, I started studying chemical engineering and figured out by middle of my junior year that was not for me. And in this process, took an elective nutrition course and fell in love with it, right? And then said, you know what, this is what I really need to be doing, and took an elective exercise science course. And ended up getting a bachelor's degree in dietetics nutrition. However, I did not want to go the traditional route to become a registered dietitian. I liked the nutrition science background, and loved the fitness side. So then went to get my master's in exercise science. And so then that provided me with more degrees, but the ability to then work in the health and fitness industry. And I did that in my first career bout and actually loved the industry. At some point worked my way in to the management side and decided, you know, I really want to do something more than just work in this industry. And so I went back to school for a business degree. And then transitioned my career for a good chunk in the healthcare technology industry. But I've always stayed embraced in the fitness industry in some way through teaching classes, some training, and then got my coaching certification along the way. And then in 2015, I was in a position in a sales role and was laid off the technology company, and and took a year to do some different things and decided that this was time to go back and get the doctoral degree, which was something I always wanted to do. So it incorporates both the degrees in health, nutrition, and exercise science. So it kind of incorporates all things, all worlds. And my specific sort of research area is in hydration and marathon runners. So we'll probably touch on hydration a little bit today. But yeah, that's sort of how I got here. So kind of a roundabout way. But, you know, this is my true passion and love in my life, this area.
I don't think anyone follows a straight line. I think most people don't really follow a straight line. You know, you having been in college athletics myself for a million years, you know, you see kids, you know, majoring in any number of things. And then all of a sudden, you know, they change tracks their junior year or their senior year, or they get out of school with a degree. And all of a sudden, a year or two later, they're doing something totally different. You know, I know for myself, my career path was radio and TV broadcasting. Now here I am hosting a podcast. And then everything changed when I discovered that I could coach and I could teach physical education and make a career out of that. And I did and continue to do that in sport of soccer. But no one takes a direct line. So long as you find your place in life, I think that's most important. So let's talk about things in general. Before we dive into the high school athlete, in general terms, you know, for your everyday functioning adult, touch upon some key things in like the area of nutrition and hydration and rest for adults in general, because parents are listening to this and there's no reason why, you know, a parent or an adult couldn't get something out of this as well.
Yes. Yeah, so the good question and point. And one thing I was going to say is, you know, even for the adolescent or the kids, right, the parent, right, your parents really set the example. And so they're the role models, right, in terms of practicing healthy living. And so, I mean, I probably won't be saying too much that's sort of new, but sometimes it's really just critical for us to be reminded of these things, right? And the challenge with nutrition and exercise is in a lot of other fields, as you know, there's just so much noise out there, right? Like, what's right? What am I supposed to do? And, you know, part of it, the industry creates this noise, right? Of, well, should we be eating carbohydrates? Should we not be eating carbohydrates, right? Should we be on these high protein diets or should we not, right? So some basics, right, are really, you know, again, I'm kind of getting down to the nitty gritty here, but, you know, eating more fruits and vegetables, right? Eating a lot of color at, you know, having your plate, say your dinner plate, be 2/3 fruits and vegetables, or usually dinner, it's vegetables. You know, consuming whole grains, right? Like, what's a whole grain? It's so confusing because there's 15 different types of bread, right? But the whole grains, the whole wheat, you know, unless you have some specific food allergy, right, are really the way to go. They provide fiber. And on that note, you know, including high fiber foods, which are your fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And, you know, paying, this is a biggie, and it again sounds so basic, but, you know, paying attention to portion sizes, right? The government folks went from the old pyramid, which probably some of you are familiar with, to my plate, which there's pros and cons of this sort of approach, but it does talk about and give visuals of a plate and how it should be broken, you know, in terms of vegetables, milk, grains, protein, right? So it gives you a visual too. But portion size is actually one of the research-based ways to manage your weight long term, right? In addition, you know, reducing sodium, you know, reading labels, making sure you're drinking enough water, right? Limiting, you know, meals away from home, which we've been able to do during COVID, right? We're probably sick of eating at home at this point, but how do you, make and have those meals not only from a nutrition standpoint, but have that be the time with the family where you're, you know, sitting at the table and not on your iPhone or phone or computer or tablet or whatever, and having meaningful conversation. And, you know, the big thing is always, you know, the exercising or move. Well, there's two things, right? Exercise and movement, right? As you know, being in this field, we talk about physical activity as sort of any kind of movement where exercise is a little more prescribed. But anything, right? Like any kind of movement, you know, some of us are even working from home, being stuck in front of the computer all day, you know, get up once an hour and do a plank and, you know, or do some band exercises, or, you know, go take the garbage out, or just any type of movement is going to be really, really and extremely helpful. So I think that's a good sort of overview, sort of general place to start. And you can hit on any of those particular topics if you'd like.
Yeah, you know, the thing I hear in your description there, or your explanation, is simplicity, how simple this really can be. You know, make sure you've got a plate that's not, you know, flowing overflowing. You know, in this country, in America, everything is big. Everything's got to be supersized. And, you know, it's a contributing factor, as you very well know, to, you know, the levels of obesity we have in this country. So portion sizes, sure. And another thing you kind of touched upon is, you know, the government standards, as you know, as well as I do, you know, agribusiness, agri-corporations, oftentimes, too often, are the driving forces behind government policy. So we should kind of shift ourselves away, not to get too political, shift ourselves away from what you might see on a government website and go toward, you know, those who are true, like yourself, those who are truly expert in this area and give you appropriate information, appropriate guidance as to what you should be consuming and how much you should be consuming. The other thing I really liked is I call it the accumulation of movement. That's kind of my term for just moving, you know, getting up. You know, if you do it more and more and more and more and more, it adds up.
It does indeed.
And it contributes to your overall, you know, general health. So.
And on that note, in one of they updated the PA guidelines in November of 2018. And they're still pretty valid, right? In terms of, you know, kind of, you know, getting 60 minutes of moderate exercise a day, right? And I mean, there's more specifics I could get into, but they do discuss about the importance of just movement, right? And how gardening and, you know, it's not exercise to get your heart rate at a certain level, but it's movement. And all this does add to your total caloric expenditure. And that's how it still works, right? What you take in and what goes out.
Yeah, caloric intake, caloric expenditure. At the end of the day, that's the bottom line. So let's shift gears. We've kind of taken care of the parents, I think, here a little bit, giving them a little bit of overview of nutrition and hydration and that kind of stuff. So now let's talk about parents. They've got, you know, high school kids that are playing soccer. And these kids are trying to balance school. They're trying to balance homework, athletics, social activities. What should the high school athlete be concerned about relative to their, let's start with nutrition. We'll take it from one step to the other, nutrition. What are some of the things that a kid on their own can manage in terms of making sure that they appropriately take care of themselves nutritionally?
That's a good question. And this is where the parents may help out in this process as well, but particularly the adolescents and kids. Need to eat breakfast is one thing, right? You know, that old saying of breakfast of champions is still so important. And for so many aspects, even if we talked about adults and weight management, right, trying to consume more of your calories earlier in the day, but the importance of breakfast and kind of a balance of carbs, proteins, and fats, right? People get up and have a million excuses. I don't have time. You know, I slept in. I'm not hungry. But it's truly about making time for breakfast. So that's like one really big thing, right? The really important thing for kids and athletes.
So to that end, and to, not to interrupt, So yeah, to that end, the idea of Pop-Tarts and cereal, is obviously out. So what could, if a kid opens up the refrigerator, and what should he or she kind of be looking at? What should they be grabbing in terms of getting themselves a healthy breakfast in the morning?
That's so interesting because, I mean, I grew up eating Pop-Tarts and milk for breakfast, right?
Me too. Me too.
But we ate, right? We weren't making eggs. And you know, there are things, you know, if you know, your mom or you don't have, a kid doesn't have time to sit and make eggs. And actually, there are things that they can eat. And cereal, if you pick like a Total or Special K, right, is fortified with a bunch of vitamins and minerals that actually gives you almost your daily requirement, believe it or not. But if you just eat cereal and milk, you're going to be hungry in an hour, right? So you need to add a whole wheat piece of toast with peanut butter, right? You need to still add some other fat, some other protein, some Greek yogurt, right? Peanut butter is a great one for kids. And that's also a good thing for adults as well, to take peanut butter sandwiches as snacks, or if they have time to have peanut butter and toast for breakfast. The yogurt, as I mentioned, the cereal. If they can have eggs, scrambled eggs, cheese, fruit. I mean, there's just so many good things. So some of the traditional breakfast foods are good, you know, just trying to avoid some of the packaged types of foods like the Pop-Tarts, right? Pop-Tarts aren't totally bad, but maybe on a rare occasion.
Yeah, every once in a while, I'll still satisfy that childhood, enjoyment that I had with a chocolate Pop-Tart. You know, not a lot, but every once in a while, you know, I'll grab it just to kind of enjoy that. So the kids are off to school, and parents' influence, the literal influence, is now at home or at work, and they're gone. And so there's Johnny or Janie in the cafeteria in school, and they're looking at chicken McNuggets. They're looking at pizza. They're looking at all kinds of bad things, which schools, you know, still do serve. What are some of the things that kids, when they're at school, they should be looking at or thinking about? Crawl into the head of a high school kid and have that internal voice direct them and guide them toward better choices at lunchtime while they're in school.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I'm going to think about that, because when I think of when I was in high school, I went to a Catholic high school, and they had these rolls that were like as big as a softball or more, right, that were really inexpensive, and you had them with butter, and that was your lunch. I'm like, really? So the traditional, and I haven't been in a school, and I know there's been a lot of reform over time, but, and I'm sure it's not the most perfect food, and I'm sure there's some variety between different types of schools, but in terms of getting some type of protein, and whatever they serve, probably their more classic meals are probably better than the fast line or the fast food line with the pizza and the things that you, and the nuggets that you mentioned. So if there's any form of, you know, vegetable, grain and meat, whether it's a chicken and rice or, you know, that would be the best selection, right? Now, a teen and a lot of these athletes too, as you know, they can eat so much. You know, having pizza a couple times a week or at least once a week is not going to kill them, right? But it's still, I think trying, you know, to, if you impact them at home in terms of making healthier choices, then, you know, lunch can be, they'll be thinking about what to really select, because they know what some of the better things are to eat, right? Now, interesting that I don't know, and maybe you can shed some light as well on, I mean, have the food selections improved in high schools?
Or have they improved?
Yeah.
You know, I can speak, and this is kind of a different environment. I can speak at the college level, having been at the college level as a soccer coach for, you know, my goodness, close to 40 years. Colleges and universities typically have a better selection of food choices for the students there than high school. High school is more limited. Now, I do know that the choices have changed at the high school level. I still have friends and colleagues who are still in education at the secondary level. So they have improved. The government, particularly in the last administration, not the current one, certainly, did make some inroads relative to improving healthy choices in our schools. So they are there. They are there. But the reality is, and I do still know this as a fact, the reality is there are still those other choices. And you said it best, that fast food line with the chicken McNuggets are there, or the pizza, or that type of thing. So as I noted, it's about the kids having that internal conversation and understanding why this is a better route for me to go rather than, the chicken McNugget type of thing.
Right.
Oh yeah. And college, even when I was a college coach and I would walk through the dining hall, it never ceased to amaze me, seeing my athletes eating, this is not for dinner, having a bowl of, cereal when there were these amazing choices, at their disposal. And I would, we had not dietitians, we had strength and conditioning coaches, we had athletic trainers educating these kids. And that was the battle that I faced as a collegiate coach for those many years.
And one thing I wanted to add to the lunch thing is the importance of having some protein with that meal. As you probably know, and I know, if you have pizza for lunch, not that there's no protein in pizza, but traditional cheese pizza, there's probably a little bit. And afterwards, an hour later, you're falling asleep in class, right? Which is not the thing that we want our athletes to do, which I know we're going to get to sleep. So, the turkey sandwiches on wheat bread, cheese, and even if they have a little bit of, a little side of chips or whatever, these things aren't, lunch probably isn't the most perfect meal. But at least we can, get them to have these better, just make some better selections. And I think that, again, all starts at home, as I mentioned.
So let's jump now to hydration, which is something I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think is discussed enough, educate our kids enough about. Talked in general terms about the importance of hydration, and then I'll zero in on the athlete and, the effects of hydration for the competitive athlete.
Yeah, so hydration is so important, and water is a nutrient, right? So when we look at how much, there's been a lot of more recent years of debate around, okay, is it 8 cups? Is it 10 cups? Is it, how many cups a day? We have it sort of in our head, it's 8 cups a day. But water and fluid comes from other sources, right? In terms of coffee and juice and milk and a lot of different areas. But water, just plain old water, is just sometimes forgotten in the big mix of things, right? And there's, for both parents and kids, there's a lot of little tactics that you can do in terms of trying to increase your water intake, having a glass of water when you get up in the morning before anything else, having a glass of water before you go to bed. And I don't know, in terms of kids nowadays, if they're carrying water bottles, and I would hope that they are. They may not be able to have them in classrooms. Who knows about if water fountains are working at this point. But having and drinking when you're thirsty, during the day, right? There's so many functions of water. Our body is 60 to 75% water. But you do get water from, fruits and vegetables are like 80%, 70 to 80% water. So we get water from so many other sources that we sometimes don't think of, not just watermelon. But it's just so important, to stay hydrated. And as we get into the sport, right, to, whether it's the adult or the child, in terms of going to the event, being hydrated before you start the event, right, is what's really important. And I think that's where you were going to go next. So I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No. Actually, so I can hear the questions now from folks. Well, what about Gatorade and, you know, what about, you know, vitamin water? Talk to the audience a little bit about those types of quote unquote fluids.
Okay. So there is this whole industry, you know, that came about, right, from actually some science with the Gatorade, right? In terms of how can we make a drink that has some carbohydrates and some electrolytes to replace for people during, you know, during or after activities, right? And what evolved is now this huge, huge, you know, multi-billion dollar industry of different types of drinks, because when soda went, we said soda was so bad, and the companies, the Cokes, the Pepsis of the world had to, you know, decrease their sales there. They had to come up with something else. So thus bottled water, vitamin water, all this, all these things. So Gatorade and some of the other competitors and some of the sports drinks, they do play a role, right, in athletics. And is a general sort of note, it doesn't replace water. Like, I'd prefer someone to be drinking more water during the day than say, okay, I'm just going to drink Gatorade all day, because that's extra calories and probably extra things that that person may not need. But Gatorade and sports drinks can and do play a role in athletics. And even, you know, even some for kids. The game of soccer, which is intermittent, it involves like all the energy systems, right? Having Gatorade, and again, now there's 15 different types of Gatorade, but even just the basic one, you know, does give the athlete some carbohydrates, which will help them in performance. So a game is how many minutes?
College, 90 minutes. 90 minutes. High school is 80, college is 90.
Okay. So not too, so 80 minutes for high school. And, you know, the athlete needs to come to the game hydrated and then use that perhaps intermittently. I don't know how often they switch. I'm sorry. I'm not as knowledgeable, obviously, as you in soccer, like how often they switch in terms of on the field.
Well, high school is more, they're more liberal in substitutions versus college and versus professional. But nonetheless, I mean, when an athlete's on the field, whether it's high school or college, you know, for the most part, depending on the coaching philosophy relative to substitution, you know, they're on there for an extended period of time.
Okay. So, you know, in terms of, and then this is, there's some variance in this depending on the size of the athlete, et cetera. But I mean, they're going to need, you know, 13 to 27 ounces of fluid an hour. So, and again, there's factors that impact that, heat, et cetera. But that's for about a 90 minute, you know, soccer match. So that's 20 ounces, you know, every 20 to 40 ounces for a 90 minute. So think about a bottle of for a 90 minute game, right? Now, one thing that's really critical is how often are they back to back? So if you're in a tournament, will you play two games in the same day?
That's entirely possible.
It's entirely possible, right? So, and the amount of time in between is probably variable. So how much time do the athletes have in between to fuel, to hydrate, right? So that would be another aspect to, again, from a nutrition standpoint, they absolutely need to fuel and hydrate in between. And again, depending on the time frame, et cetera, would determine what types of foods would be best, and even from a hydration standpoint.
You know, it sounds like, again, to try to keep this, you know, in simplest of terms, It sounds like it's important to hydrate throughout the course of your waking day, as a general rule. If you are an athlete, prior to your getting involved with the exercise bout in a training session or a game is when you should increase the amount of hydration, and certainly throughout the course of a game, hydrating, and then post-match, increasing the amount of fluids you take in. Is that a safe path to think about for a high school kid?
That actually is. And it's we're definitely not overhydrating, but the big thing is you make sure before your practice as well, right, that you're hydrated. And there's some precursory ways to determine if someone's hydrated or not. And one is still morning urine, believe it or not. And there's scales, and this is still science based of getting a sense of, is your urine clear or is it brown, right? To see where your hydration level is. And it's just so important because it impacts your performance, right? It does. And so we do want these athletes to be just drinking water regularly, making sure they're hydrated pre-practice or pre-event, and then the drinking that, 13 to 27 ounces of fluid an hour, right, during a match, during an event, and even practice, they need to be hydrating. And then back to the carbohydrates. Well, when do I drink Gatorade and when do I not? So Gatorade, particularly for endurance athletes, is, the carbohydrates are scientifically shown to improve performance, right? So someone that's doing an extended endurance run, a marathon runner, a cyclist, over 90 minutes can start consuming Gatorade or some type of carbohydrate and electrolyte. However, it has been shown as well with some of the intermittent athletes, right, because they are going hard and, again, sort of using all the energy systems, having some carbohydrate is probably going to still help them with their performance as well.
So we've checked the nutrition box, we've checked the hydration box. Let's move on to, and as I prepared my notes here, I have three words: rest, recuperation, regeneration. Let's educate our parents and our athletes, for that matter, what that means, the importance of rest as it relates to recuperation, as it relates to regeneration.
Sure. So we are in a sleep-deprived society. Now, maybe that's changed a little bit during COVID, with people not traveling, and maybe people are sleeping in a little bit more. But I mean, just as a society, we do not get regular sleep. And it just impacts us so much from a health standpoint, right? As you probably know. And I could probably go on and on with some of the sleep aspects, or the lack of sleep aspects, in terms of, alertness, performance, obesity, on and on. So teens particularly need more sleep, right? When adults, the old adage of 8 hours a day is kind of still out there, right? And I even think that, as you age, it seems like you want more sleep. And for teens, they particularly need the sleep too. Again, as you said, that the rejuvenate, I mean, that's when your body recovers, right? And teens and college students, right, are always seem to have, may, or they not always, but may have crazy sleep habits, staying up late to finish projects. I can think when I was I don't do this now, but as an undergraduate, pulling the all-nighters to try to study for a test and whatever it is, right? And they really do need more like 9, 10, sometimes even 11 hours of sleep. And sometimes in today's world, that's not realistic. And, and part of it, your body does tell you in terms of how much to sleep. But sort of all the sleep experts, and I'm not the sleep expert, but I've done enough reading, et cetera, on it, is just trying to get the regular sleep, right? And you probably do this as well, like going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time. And noting that, as a parent, you should note that know, your adolescent needs more sleep than you do, right? And it is just a big part of, and again, you could just tie everything back here to performance, right? Like, you know, the whole eat to win, sleep to win, you know, all these healthy habits are going to help the athlete's performance in the long run.
So let's talk about kind of a negative thing in terms of, you know, athletes putting in their body, and that's alcohol. That's alcohol. Again, my experience is the college level. Some things hasn't changed in college. And when I was back in school 5,000 years ago, you know, kids are still drinking, and, you know, kids are drinking in high school. Let's not be naive. Let's not, you know, think that they're all saints and perfect out there. They're not. Talk to us about the detrimental effects, the consumption of alcohol, particularly as a high school player, where your body is still growing and developing and is still vulnerable, if you will, to toxins in general, but in toxins, in this case, alcohol.
Yes. And I think the biggest thing around this is, again, going back to that parent and trying to hone in on, you know, everything you eat, drink is going to impact your performance, right? Do you, you know, care about your game? Do you want to be your best? You want to be your best as an athlete, and even as a person, right? The impact of alcohol, and again, depending on the timing, etc. But, you know, can, as we know, and you may know, right? It's depressant, can have a dehydrating effect. So back to that hydration, right? And again, if an athlete drinks the night before a big event or a tournament or even practice, right, they're definitely, they may not think so, right? Because sometimes and you and I were probably the same way, right? We just think we're inevitable and nothing can impact us and we can do anything. And it's going to have an effect. And so it's really just drumming home that whole, you know, it alcohol takes a certain amount of time to get out of your body, right? So it's still just hitting home on that. Hey, this is going to impact your performance, right? And you want to be your best tomorrow. So, you know, drink on your off day when you don't have something the next day.
You know, it always, this mindset always cracked me up despite the education was out there. Again, I talk in terms of my experience as a college coach. You know, the kids would get, they would do everything they were supposed to do, you know, leading up to Saturday's match. And then their next match after Saturday, maybe not even until the next Wednesday or Thursday, and sometimes not even until the next week. And their minds that would say, well, you know, I play today. If I go out and I, you know, drink to my heart's content on a Saturday night, I'll be fine by, you know, next Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, that's something that always, you know, always kind of cracked me up that they didn't realize the long-term detrimental effects that alcohol would have upon them. You know, from the very moment that they cracked open that first cold one to the last, that there's going to be remnants of that in their bodies, you know, into the next week. So
right, and you were probably practicing in those days as well. So,
oh yeah. Oh. Mondays were, listen, Suzanne, Mondays were always interesting on training day. Mondays were always interesting. I could always tell, you know, what kind of weekend they had by their exuberance coming to the field, if you will.
Right. And I guess the only other thing I wanted to mention about alcohol too is the caloric impact, right? Mm. I mean, alcohol is a lot of empty calories, right? What we call empty calories, really has, you know, there's some carbohydrates, but there's really no nutritional value, right? And that's huge. So if an athlete is having to manage their weight, which we all do at some point in time, and, you know, some athletes may even be more concerned about it than others, right? That's a huge thing. And then perhaps even to your point, so their time between matches, you know, maybe it's moderation, right? Like, we still always come back to the same thing from when I first studied nutrition. It's eating variety, eating foods with a lot of variety, and eating in moderation, like drinking in moderation, right? Everything, in hydrating in moderation, like everything is is variety and moderation, right, in life, right?
Yeah, that has withstood the test of time. That has withstood the test of time, that idea of moderation. So I want to get into overuse issues, and not the acute overuse issues. You know, when we hear about overuse syndrome, I often think about, you know, Little League baseball pitchers and overuse syndrome and relative to their elbows and that type of thing. But I want to talk about more long-term specifically, and I'll use the high school athlete as an example. So young Johnny or Janie, they get into the high school season training, preseason training starts the third week of August. They go through, you know, their high school season where every day they're playing, you know, maybe they have a Sunday off and maybe a Saturday off. And sometimes they're playing three games a week. If their team makes the tournament in late October, early November, the games, if they continue to win games, that they're playing every other night. This may go on until, you know, early to mid-November. Then they go off and they play indoor soccer at the local indoor facility with a club team. And then from the indoor season, they go off and it's spring soccer, and then it's club soccer all over again. And they're playing in the spring and they're going to tournaments. That's the kind of overuse that I'm referring to. What do athletes, what do parents need to know regarding overuse, or over-involvement might be a better term, you know, for their athletes relative to playing a sport?
Very good and common, I think, probably with a lot of these athletes, right? And from season to season, and you know, you think about the professional level, right? So they practice, and I'm sure some of the trainers and the experts in this area, I hope these kids are practicing periodization, right, with their training. And going from one thing to the next so frequently or during the year probably doesn't allow much for that, in terms of, because their season isn't just in the fall like a football player, right? So they can plan the rest of their year accordingly. So one of the big things is, in terms of having, I guess there's the mental and the physical part, is having like a week or more off in between, right, from not playing soccer. And even as Dr. Westcott had mentioned, you know, in terms of some type of activity, but not soccer related, right, which would give that both that mental and physical break. I just think it's important for everyone, even adult, you know, or us as pseudo athletes, in terms of how we plan our activities, to, you know, practice that whole periodization thing, but also to take breaks. And I think the mental piece, again, sort of that inevitability that sometimes college and even maybe high school athletes may have, in, you know, having a week totally off of the sport, and maybe doing hiking or walking, or, you know, just something. So just so much, a little bit more, you know, low key. And yeah, I don't know how much, and as much in terms of the strength training, from a soccer standpoint, and how that works, and how you would do it going from each of those, you know, from the areas, from the, you know, from the fall to the club to the, that would be a lot.
You mentioned periodization. Explain to our parents, our athletes listening, what periodization is.
Yes. So periodization is actually, there's actually food and nutrition periodization as well. But usually when we refer to periodization, we're talking about the athlete or even the fitness enthusiast, and how you plan your various training modalities according to your season. So, you know, I brought up football, thinking off the top of my head, and how a football player would plan the winter, the spring, the summer, and then the fall for the active season, right? So their weight training, their eating, their activity level would be different for those different periods. It doesn't have to necessarily be based on the seasons. It could be even, you know, a lot more specific around the time frames. But the idea behind it is to prepare yourself, prepare the athlete for that particular season, right, or event. And in doing so, you're going to have various aspects of your training program, and you're going to plan accordingly. So for that particular event. So, for example, even for the soccer player, when in their off season, if in an example you said they're going from this activity to this activity to this activity, so when do they do their weight training, right? Or when, and you would put that in a, if they had the summer off that they're not playing, or the spring, maybe their weight training would be heavier during a certain 8-week period, right? But the idea, again, I hope that was helpful, is to basically plan your fitness and your, even your nutrition, then based on your fitness activity, and all the planning is evolved around that particular sport or event.
Periodization, before it was even called periodization, I don't know, I was always hypersensitive to that, well, that thing before it was called periodization, but for the lack of better terms for our discussion, we'll continue to call it periodization. I was hypersensitive as a college coach, ensuring that, you know, our training, the intensity of training bouts were at an appropriate level, when to give, you know, athletes off. I would look at the schedule. Gee, we play twice in that week, and then we play three times the next week. Well, that's going to change things. And then just planning accordingly, and then trying to integrate, you know, strength and conditioning throughout the course of the season, and knowing when it's appropriate to kind of pick it up, and when it's, you know, appropriate to ease back on it. That is such an important concept, periodization. You know, I would to our parents, you know, you want to make sure that your coaches are fully aware of this concept and are applying it appropriately for our high school athletes. And then same thing with club coaches, not just high school coaches, but for club coaches as well. And then having a hypersensitivity, you know, over the course of your soccer calendar year, with your children, you know, is periodization taking place, so that my Johnny or Janie isn't getting, you know, burned out, you know, experiencing overuse issues, getting mentally fatigued, just getting sick of it all mentally, and maybe quitting. So this idea of periodization, and I'm pontificating a little bit here, I think is super, super, super important. So,
yeah. And just to add to that real quick with the nutrition part. Yeah. So during the active season, right, their caloric needs are going to be more, right? They need to eat more. I mean, these kids are probably really active all year long, but they need, you know, they need to have we didn't get into snacking, but they need to have appropriate snacks. You know, they should have a snack before, you know, an hour before they have a hard practice in the afternoon, you know, after lunch, like if it's 3 o'clock or 3:30. But those caloric needs and their nutritional needs, although we have some basic guidelines for throughout the year, those may change. And so you want to make sure your athlete's getting enough food, right, and enough good food and nutrient-dense food, particularly during the season. So that's where that sort of, that kind of overlays the whole athletic periodization sort of calendar, right? The food sort of comes in on top of that.
You know, we often talk about, and for generations, you know, talking to your kids about, you know, drugs or alcohol or anything like that. But it is safe to say, Suzanne, that it's important that parents have the conversation about diet and nutrition and hydration and rest. Is that, I guess it's a loaded question. That's an appropriate thing to say. Wouldn't you agree?
It absolutely is. And I think that the challenges, and I'm hoping, you know, some of the athletic trainers, some of the coaches, right, are supplying some of this information, right? As I mentioned earlier, I mean, parents can get more educated themselves. Parents set the example, right, for their kids in terms of healthy living, and then buying, you know, most likely they're the folks that buy food for the family, et cetera. So it's just super important for them to have those conversations, right, and to get a little more educated themselves.
Now, speaking of education, as you know, I'm a coach educator, United Soccer coaches, have been for many, many, many years. You know, parents shouldn't assume that just because the coach has a particular license or diploma from an organization, whether it's United Soccer Coaches or U.S. Soccer, that particular license equips the coach with an expertise, or at the very minimum, proficiency in, you know, nutrition, hydration, and rest and recuperation. It doesn't. I can give you the short answer. It doesn't. In some courses that we teach, we touch upon that kind of stuff, but not to the extent where someone's going to walk away with a real level of proficiency and expertise in this area. So that's a long way of me asking you, how does a soccer coach, or any coach for that matter, above and beyond the licensure that they may earn to know about the X's and O's in a game, where can they go get educated to become better equipped in this area of nutrition and hydration and rest and that type of thing?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, and you're absolutely right in terms of most, you know, sort of not having, you know, the education, right? There's a lot of different organizations, and I'll mention a few, and, you know, I can even send you probably some additional information if you'd like. And probably at the college level or at the high school level, I don't know about the college level. I mean, the RD, right, the registered dietitian that has the sports certification, the sports nutrition certification, is the true expert, you know, in this area, right? American College of Sports Medicine is going to have several position papers on like a lot of these topics, right? And, you know, even in my most recent research in terms of surveying marathon runners, where do they get their information? And most just Google it, right? Or they're just getting it from some internet source that who knows what's really accurate. But you know, there are credible resources, as I just mentioned a few, and then the Journal of Athletic Training is another one. The old Dietetics Association is called the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and they have this specific group called SCAN, Sports Nutrition Dietetics Practice Group. But those are truly the experts sort of in this area, right? Now, as you're an expert in soccer, and you provide a lot of expertise to some of these folks, I mean, there are, you know, people like me, right, that can also provide some of this, you know, provide some of the education in this area as well. And I hope that was helpful.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. You know, I say it all the time when I teach coaching education courses that, you know, I always compliment the coaches in the class that, hey, great that you're here. And, you know, you're learning about best practices and the appropriate methodologies, teaching the game of soccer, no matter what the age group or the level of course is. But I also take it a step further. And I say to them, your next step is to get educated on how to teach. You know, the effectiveness of teaching and learning the best practices and appropriate methods of actually teaching stuff, if you will. And this is just another arm of that. You know, you go get a coaching license or a diploma. In addition to becoming expert or proficient in the art of teaching, you also have to have expertise and proficiency in this area of nutrition, hydration, and rest, you know, things that we've talked about. You know, rarely does one soccer course offers one-stop shopping, if you will, for all the things necessary that a coach needs in the modern age to effectively, you know, teach the game, show appropriate care and concern for the student athlete. When I say that, care and concern mean, you know, care how they eat, how they hydrate, how they're resting, and all that type of stuff. So it's necessary that you go out and get educated in other areas so that you can better serve your student athletes. You mentioned contacting you. What's the best way to get a hold of Suzanne Young? If people want to learn more about this, what's the best way of getting a hold of you?
Yes, I would say my email, which is my Gmail account, which is slyoung6728@gmail.com.
That's great, and I would encourage folks to do that. Suzanne has a wealth, well, you know now, a wealth of knowledge and experience regarding this area, and is a great resource for you. And I encourage folks to do that so you can become better equipped. You know, if you're a parent, better equipped to taking care of your child, and if you're an athlete, taking care of yourself. So. Well, Suzanne, we've covered it all. I mean, we've checked a lot of boxes here. I all my show notes here are, you know, I've checked a lot of boxes here. What did we miss anything?
I don't think so, John. And I guess what I would suggest is if there's any area, say, for example, with hydration, and, you know, we kind of skimmed the surface of a lot of these things, a lot of these topics, I'd be happy to, you know, do something more specific around, you know, carbohydrates in athletes or hydration or, you know, one of those areas.
Well, listen, I will take you up on that. And we can really dive into something with a little bit more detail. And I will definitely take you up on that. I think our audience would definitely be interested in that. So anyways, today our guest has been Suzanne Young. We've talked a great deal about nutrition and hydration and diet and rest and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully, if you're a parent listening to this, that you yourself as an adult have picked up some valuable information, but more so for the student athletes. You know, they picked up some information as well. So this is the GP Soccer Podcast. I am indeed your host, Giovanni Puccini. We're going to break to a very short commercial message. And on the other side of the commercial, we're going to get into soccer by the numbers. Soccer by the numbers. You're going to have to come back on the other side to find out what that's all about. This is Giovanni Puccini of the GP Soccer Podcast. I'll talk to you on the other side of the commercial break.
Hey, this is Giovanni Puccini of the GP Soccer Podcast. You know that GP Soccer is more than just a podcast, with private training, consulting, clinics, and guest speaking. Do you run a soccer camp over the summer? Is your youth soccer organization or club hosting a special event? Are you interested in having an expert voice come speak to your group? How about having a guest speaker come to your event who has a wealth of experience in all aspects of the game? Maybe someone who has traveled the world studying the game as well as having expertise on the state of the game right here in the United States. Well, that someone is me, Giovanni Puccini. I'm a United Soccer Coaches Master Coach, a member of its national staff, national goalkeeper staff, and I serve as the state director for Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. In addition, I'm a USYS East Region staff coach, and I was a highly successful college head coach for over 25 years. I've seen and learned quite a bit over the years, and it would be a pleasure to come speak to your group. For further information, contact me via email at gp4soccer@yahoo.com or at 617-968-1800.
Hello, this is Wayne Westcott, professor of exercise science, and you're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with host Giovanni Puccini.
This is Soccer by the Numbers on the GP Soccer Podcast.
Welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. I'm Giovanni Puccini. Thank you so much for staying with us throughout the course of this broadcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview or conversation I had with Suzanne Young. Goodness knows I did. A lot of really good information in there that I think will be very useful for parents and high school athletes as they prepare or will be preparing for their high school season this fall. Again, I hope that is the case. Again, not to beat the dead horse, but, you know, we got to get through this COVID-19 thing, and hopefully by that point we'll be able to get back on the high school soccer fields in general. So here we are, soccer by the numbers. So I pulled a couple of surveys, and again, to kind of give you let me back up for a second. This is kind of an overview of this soccer by the numbers thing. You know, sometimes I kind of get into what it's all about. Sometimes I don't. The numbers speak for themselves. Today we'll kind of get into it just a tiny bit because it's an issue that, my goodness, still rears its ugly head, and that has to do with, you know, sportsmanship and behavior. So the first survey numbers here that I pulled is from the National Association of Sports Officials. And per this survey, 56% of youth sports officials surveyed said that sportsmanship is getting worse. 39% say parents cause most problems. 84% say spectators treat officials unfairly. These next few numbers I pull from, believe it or not, Liberty Mutual. They're pretty active in responsible sports as part of what they do. So they did a survey on, you know, very similar to what I just noted about the sports officials survey. And these numbers, 60% of respondents of this particular survey reported that either witnessing or participating in negative or abusive sideline behavior. 26 of parents said they have witnessed a verbally abusive coach. 16% of parents said they have witnessed a physical confrontation between parents. I shouldn't laugh. 55% of coaches have experienced parents yelling negatively at officials or their own kids. And 2 in 5 have experienced parents yelling negatively at other kids. Ladies and gentlemen, what the heck is going on? You know, I opened the show today with some pretty heavy duty stuff about, you know, race and, you know, what's going on in our country. But I guess you could kind of tie this in, I guess, just in terms of dignity, just dignity and appropriate behavior relative to your fellow man. And in this case, fellow man is a coach or a kid on a soccer field or a referee. Dignity. I'm not a sociologist. Don't claim to be one. You know, I've read enough and I'm well read enough to kind of put my finger on some of the hot spots that lead, you know, to these types of very, very disturbing numbers. But, you know, to boil it down without really kind of pontificating here, we've got to understand when we talk about youth sports, it is supposed to be a joyous, fun experience for not just the players, but it should be for the adults as well. I mean, my goodness, how great is it to be able to go to a field on a nice day and, you know, open up your easy chair, your folding chair, and put your feet up and watch a group of kids playing a game, right? A group of kids playing a game. And when you watch that and you see that, you should be getting goosebumps of just joy of watching these young people, these young human beings, just having a boatload of fun. There's nothing more simple than that. There's nothing probably more joyous than that, than witnessing children having a joyous, happy time. And if you have to have that conversation before you go to the field in order to, you know, to really take in what I just described, then you got to have that that conversation. Because I'm going to tell you what, and I'll end with this particular statistic. Upwards to 70% of kids involved in youth sports quit youth sports by the time they hit high school, and in many cases, by the time they hit middle school. The number one reason why they quit, it's not fun. It's not fun. And these numbers that I just shared with you are a contributing factor to their experience not being fun. So you got to ask yourself as an adult, as a parent, as a coach, anyone involved in youth sports or high school sports, you know, do you have to reassess your personality, reassess your place in the world of youth sports or sports in general, so that you're a positive contributing force and not a negative one? So that's where we're at. Dignity, acting, carrying yourself with dignity and contributing to the joy and fun to the youth soccer experience. Hopefully someday I can, you know, read some numbers that say how much progress we've made. But we've got a ways to go. We have a ways to go in a lot of things, don't we? We've learned a lot at the beginning and the end of this broadcast relative to our behavior as human beings. You know, time for changes, folks. Time for changes. So, yes, you know who I am. You know, I'm Giovanni Pacini. And today was the GP Soccer Podcast. And if you like what you heard today, my goodness, tell everyone. If you didn't, tell everyone anyway. Please do. If you'd like to advertise on the GP Soccer Podcast, you can contact me, Giovanni Pacini, at GP4Soccer, and yes, that's the number 4, at yahoo.com, or at 617-968-1800. This is Giovanni Pacini of the GP Soccer Podcast, and goodness knows, I'll catch you later.